And this week, we're going to focus on the power of the overcomer. And if you were here last week, great, you'll remember all of this. And if you weren't, just a quick recap of our big idea for the series. And our series is based on, since Jesus overcame, we can find hope and power to overcome this life. Whatever it is that we face in this life, we can have hope and power to overcome because Jesus has already overcome. Now, we were in John 16 last week, and it was our theme verse of last week where it talked about overcome, and we said that it came from a Greek word where we get our English word, Nike, the brand, from, and it means victory, or conquer, or overcome, to carry off victory, and it implies a battle. That when we overcome, there has to be a battle. And so Nike has capitalized on this, and if you watch any of their commercials, you know that there's always some type of battle. We also said, though, back in the original text, that the word overcome is in the perfect tense, which means that it was a one-time completed action. Jesus already overcame once and for all, but we get the ongoing results as Jesus overcame. And so we can be overcomers as well because he was the overcomer. So last week we looked at our big idea, and that was the hope of the overcomer can only be found in the hope of the overcomer. And we can try all sorts of things, but until we place our only hope in the only hope that has any power to do anything, Jesus Christ, we're going to continue to spin our wheels. And so we can become an overcomer when we put our hope in the power of the overcomer. And so here is our big idea for this week. Our big idea is we have the power of the overcomer when we are willingly content with the power of the overcomer. This week is going to be a little bit different. I've got some stories we're going to tell about overcoming. But what we've got to realize is if we want to have the power of the overcomer in our lives, we need to be willingly content with him and him alone. And we're going to look at a passage from Philippians that will help to illustrate this. But before we do, I want you to turn to your neighbor, and I want you to say, I have the power. Turn to your neighbor and say, I have the power. Now, if you grew up, if you were a kid in the 80s, then you said, I have the power like this man. Give yourself bonus points. Although I have to tell you, the bonus points are like K in the word night. It really just doesn't matter. But you know, like we always, when I was a kid, I grew up in the 80s, and so 85, I was about 7, everything was hold your sword up in the air and pull it back, I have the power, right? And so if you kind of had that nostalgia, yes, I feel that too. But this morning, we're going to talk about the power of the overcomer, and the best way that I know how is to allow the strongest person that I know to be able to tell his story. Now, I'm going to invite a friend of mine, Justin. Many of you know him, but I want to tell a little story. You can come up, a little story about how I met him, kind of really for the first time. So I was new, and he had a daughter, has a daughter, in student ministry, and she was in seventh grade. We played this game upstairs, and I did not know it at the time. Like, I didn't know, but she did not appreciate that game very much. And so, it wasn't a violent game, but somehow she kind of got in the bottom of the pile, literally. And so I'm standing in the foyer, and I'm getting ready to go, and all of a sudden I see this white van pull in. And it's not uncommon, because people forget things all the time. And so I see him come out, and he's got that look. If you know that dad look, you better run. But I didn't know him, and so I opened the door, and he told me, and he was very gracious. I apologized, I didn't realize. But then we began a great friendship after that. But a little bit of fear first, which is always good. But as I got to know him, he told me a little bit of a story. And so as we were thinking about this series of Overcome, I thought to myself, he has to tell part of his story. And so he willingly is up here and praising the Lord for that. I did not coerce him. I did not, I promise. And so this is Justin Medina. If you don't know who he is, get to know him. God is doing great things in his life.
Good morning. This is really tough for me to be up here. I'm extremely nervous, so please bear with me. It's going to be hard for me to read the words on the page as I'm shaking here. So, Rick wanted me to come up here today and share a picture of what overcoming looks like in my life. In September 2007, my wife and I found out we were pregnant with our second child. I felt on top of the world in that moment in my life. I was 24 years old. We had newly been married for a few months. We had a beautiful three-year-old daughter, which I can't look at right now because I'll tear up. I was working two jobs. And forgive me if I don't look out that often. I'm just going to really try and focus to get through this here. Chantel was going to college. I was working two jobs. This was the beginning of our lives, and I remember it was a happy time, great and full of excitement. Little did I know, 1 month later, in October 2007, I would be diagnosed with cancer. I'd love to explain in detail what that diagnosis meant to me, but I'd turn into a puddle up here, so let's just say it was terrifying, as you can imagine. Especially since I battled high anxiety around fear of death since a young age. Unfortunately, my faith was not strong back then, so I relied mostly on myself for answers, and I found my value in what my life was and who was in it. I did have a strong support system of family and friends that helped me through that challenging time, and medical doctors that I relied on for the initial removal of cancer, and the 6 years of testing and screening that followed. It was not without some scares along the way, but I'm happy to say I'm 11 years cancer-free. When Rick asked me to share about overcoming, I originally thought this was a story that I'd focus on. But recent events have shown me the hold that cancer still has on me today. Last month on Saturday, I was shopping at Walmart. I was feeling some heart palpitations, so I checked my blood pressure, and it read high. I continued to check it over the next couple of days, and it remained high. I did what everyone does, started Googling my symptoms. At which time I convinced myself I had cancer again, and that the high blood pressure was a secondary effect. I made a doctor's appointment. This is the day that Rick texted me and asked if I would share about overcoming cancer in my life. I thought, geez, Rick, your timing could not be worse. In the moment, overcome did not feel like the right word. On Wednesday, the fear had gotten the best of me. I had an anxiety breakdown, and I had to take the rest of the week off of work. My appointment was Friday. At that point, my blood pressure read normal, and my cancer markers were clean. From that week full of fear and anxiety, I learned this: do not rely on the blood pressure machine at Walmart. It needs to be recalibrated. No, in all seriousness, I learned that cancer still has a hold on me today. And although overcome can mean something to you, to control, master, conquer, defeat, triumph, to me, overcome means to deal with. Myself, I survived cancer, but only with God's hand can I overcome cancer. And Rick's timing was God's timing. And God held my hand through this month process of preparing to speak to you today. He used this opportunity to grow my understanding and faith in ways I didn't know needed to be done. He shared some things with me and reminded me that I now find my value in Him and no longer need to rely on myself as I did in the past. I know firsthand I can place my hope in the overcomer. He was there for me when I went through it, even though I hadn't acknowledged him. Then I can place my hope in him for my future. Thanks.
I would hate for you to misunderstand me, that somehow overcoming means you have already overcame. It's a process in which every single day we have the choice whether we want to continue in this walk with Jesus and him holding our hand, or we walk away. But the question is what are we going to do with the times that God has given us? The times that we go through trials and struggles, what are we going to do with that? That is the true definition of overcome. And we're going to look at a passage of Scripture. If you want to open your Bibles to Philippians chapter 4, let's see if we can get the back up on the screen. And if you're in your pew Bible, it's page 832. And we're going to look at a passage from Philippians chapter 4. Now, I intentionally chose the NIV 2011, and I'll talk about that here in a little bit. But if you're in Philippians chapter 4, it says this, verse 10. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content in whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me the strength. So God, thank you for your working in our lives. You not only work in the church life as a whole, but you work in the church life individually. And God, we are your body. We are your church. And so we praise you and we thank you. We give you glory for just small instances where you remind us that you have not stopped working. And we may look around and think, oh my word, how can I even overcome this season of my life or this thing that I'm going through? But in reality, we know that you are still at work and will continue to be at work. And we praise you for it. And we pray that the work that was started and continued in Ghana each and every year will continue to bear fruit so that your church around the world can proclaim that you are the risen one, and through you and you alone we overcome. Amen. And so just to give you a little bit of background, the church at Philippi. The church at Philippi was probably the first church planted by the Apostle Paul in his first missionary journey. And so it had special meaning to Paul. Now, the other great thing about the letter to the Philippians was that if you read through it, there are really no things that Paul points out and says, you got to change. If you read through the book of 1 Corinthians, it's full of them. You know, I heard you were doing this and you really got to change that behavior. The book of Philippians really has all praise for what they're doing in following Jesus. The one downside about the church at Philippi, although Philippi was a very wealthy city, the church at Philippi was very poor. And so verse 10, when it talks about that you were able to give, it's because they had kind of sent Paul off but had no money to send him. And so finally, unlike like the other churches that had tons of money, the Philippians gave out of their poverty rather than out of their wealth. And so Paul was just praising them and saying, you know, hey, thank you so much, but I'm not saying that because I'm in need, because he says, I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I've learned to be content whatever the circumstance. Now, Paul is in Rome at this moment. He's in Rome, and he is writing to the church at Philippi while he is in prison. Talk about content in whatever circumstance he's in. And he says this, and he says, I have learned the secret of being content. Now, Paul does not really go into a dissertation on what it means to, what is this secret? So when I get to heaven, I want to say, hey, Paul, what did you mean by the secret of being content, because I don't want to put words into Paul's mouth. But I think that we all want to know, what is the secret of contentment? Am I right? Like, we all want to know, what does it mean, like, this secret of contentment? Because really, if we're a follower of Jesus, I think we all want to be content. And it's unfortunate that we live in a culture in which we are not content at all. And we watch a TV show, a 30-minute TV show, that's 9 minutes of telling you that you are not content until you have this. And so we live in this. And so I'm just throwing this out. This is not Paul's definition. This is my kind of interpretation, application of what the secret of contentment is. And that is, you don't have the power in yourself to overcome. You don't. None of us do. We don't have this list. If I were to do this, 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 and this, I'm going to overcome. Whatever my situation is, if I just do this more and do this less, I'm going to overcome. Because we learn that the hope of the overcomer can only be found in the hope of the overcomer. And so what the secret is that we don't have the power, but the better part is, and you don't have to. You don't have to have the power in and of yourself to overcome. That is the secret, because when we realize that there's someone greater than us who we can find our hope and our power in, that is when we overcome. Or better, we realize that we are in the process of. And we still have these little things where we kind of fall backwards a little bit, but it's all about what are we doing next, and how are we learning, and how are we growing through this. And so Paul says, listen, the secret of contentment is found in verse 13. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. And so you might be thinking, Pastor Rick, you missed a couple letters, because I always learn it says, I can do all things. And so this is why I like the NIV 2011 translation, because it helps us understand that really we can't do all things. I really want to fly. Okay, so if I go up to the top of the church and jump off, I'm sorry, that's really just not going to work. Really? Right? And so it's not that I can do all things, but when we put this, when we put the word this, what does he mean by this? And it's looking back and saying, I can be content in all situations, whether I'm hungry or well-fed, whether I live in plenty or I live in need. When we realize that no matter what we go through in this life, no matter what situations, no matter what circumstances, I can be content in this. Because wherever he has us, whatever he's placed us in, it's always for a reason. It's always for him to do something in our lives. And so here is my question for you this week. Is, do we try to overcome in our own strength, or do we rely on his strength? Because that is the real question, is do I rely on my own strength, or do we rely on his strength? Why don't you turn to your neighbor and say, I can do all this. Turn to your neighbor and say, I can do all this. I want to tell you just a little bit, just a tiny bit. I've got a little bit of a ring coming on the monitors. Can we just lower the monitors? I want to tell you just a little bit of my story. I'll try to make this as quick. I don't want to take away from Justin's story. But I think the way that we help people all understand is when we go through things and are able to share. And so I'm 12 years old. I don't know a whole lot about a lot of things, because we grew up in a very sheltered, very conservative home religiously. And so, like, I'm more like a 9.5-year-old in knowing of stuff. So I'm 12 years old, and my dad is an associate pastor / youth pastor at a church, and I remember just about ready for youth group, I couldn't wait and find out that he comes home and says, I just want to let you know, guys, that I've been relieved. I'm no longer the pastor at True Memorial Baptist. And, of course, I have no idea what that even means. So kind of shortly after that, I come home. My mom worked 11 at night to 7 in the morning. She worked that third shift, and she was always home in the morning. Always home by the time we left for school, and she was always home by the time we got home from school, and she would sleep during the day. She wasn't home one day when we came home, and that was really weird because my dad did the grocery shopping. My dad was like extreme couponer on steroids, and so he did all the shopping. My mom wasn't home, and my dad sat us down and said, I had to take your mom to the hospital. Now, when you're 12 years old, 9 and a half, you know, thinking, you begin to think, oh, well, you know, is she sick? Is she the flu? Does she, you know, would she fall and break a leg? I don't know. And find out it's not that kind of hospital. And you don't really know when you're that young, like, that there are different kinds of hospitals. And I still don't know to this day whether she attempted or just was suicidal. And so when you're 12 years old and you don't understand these things anyway, and then for the next 3 years, my mom spends more time in hospitals, institutions, rehabs, emotional rehab for the next 3 years, that she spends more time in them than out. So for the next 3 years, my 12 to 15 year old, I'm learning to grow up with my mom having these severe emotional difficulties. She didn't know this, but as she kind of come to find out, she was severely physically, sexually, emotionally abused as a child. So her brain covers all of these things up, and then they all come out at once. She doesn't know what to do with them. And so she's the first person I ever knew who cut. And now it's kind of one of those things where a lot of people know. She has razor blade slices on her arm. I didn't know what that meant. I thought she cut herself shaving. Why do you shave your arms? But that was what it was, right? That's what a 12-year-old tries to figure out. And so for those 3 years, I got really, really angry. Really angry. Kind of partly angry at God, partly angry at my parents, my mom. Why can't you just deal with these things? Which is the worst thing to say to a person struggling with mental illness. And it wasn't what I really felt, but you know, when you're 15, you're very selfish anyway. So, and I remember my mom was home, and we got into this heated argument, and I'm not sure if my mom and I argued and fought because we were very similar personalities, and you know how similar personalities, or I was just very angry at her. And I remember we were in this violent word fight, not physical, word. And I remember I looked at her and I called her a terrible name, the worst name that you can call your mom. And I remember thinking, oh my word, what did I just do? I turned around, I walked away, and we had a door, a hollow door, going down to the basement, and I just laid into it and I put my hand right through it. That was at that point I realized I had something really wrong in my heart. And so I go to my room and I spend some time in my room and I had to work through these things. I had to overcome them, because if I didn't, then they're just going to work their way into adulthood. And I find even now as an adult that it's still there. It's not something that you just, it's not a light switch you turn off and it goes away. It's something you have to work at every day. But I realized that if I tried in my own strength, in my own power, I would never be able to overcome. And so when we get to heaven, I really don't believe that God is going to tell you all of your good behaviors. Oh, Rick, oh my word, you were so great at this. He's not going to say, wow, I was so impressed that you overcame that. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. So, like, when I called my mom that name, I realized that I had a really bad mouth. I mean, really bad mouth when I was before that. So 13, 14, I thought it was cool. I thought using language inappropriate was cool. Made me feel important. Maybe I expressed myself better. It really didn't. But anyway, and so I realized, I said, God, I'm serious. I said, at this point, I can no longer control when I swear and when I don't. So by your strength, I never, ever want to swear ever again. And again, I don't think God is going to look at when I get to heaven and say, oh my word, great job. Woo! But by his power, I have never spoken another swear word since that day. And it's only by his power. And it's only by his strength do we ever have any ability to say, this is how I follow the Lord. This is how I continue. Because we only have the power of the overcomer when we're willingly content with the power of the overcomer. And I had to choose. And I had to realize that, yes, that terrible things happened to my mom, and because of that, things happened to me, not nearly as terrible, but I had to choose and I had to decide whether I would let that affect me or I would affect it by living my life completely sold out for him. And so Jesus, last week we looked at what does it mean for him to overcome, and we said that Jesus pursued the crown of thorns before he pursued the crown of glory. He willingly went to the cross, even though this is what he deserved, this is what he should have had, that's the crown he should have been wearing all along, but in reality, he said, this is the one that I choose. And so if we are going to overcome, if we are going to be overcomers, then in order for us to receive this, in order for us to hear those words, well done, good and faithful servant, we must pursue the crown of thorns. I think for some followers of Jesus, what we want is this. And all we ever do is pursue this, that we forget that Jesus says, if you want to be my disciple, you must take up your cross. And Rick paraphrase, you must put on the crown of thorns and daily follow me. If we want to be genuine, true, sold out, devoted followers of Jesus, this is what we're going to have to put on. And that means that we're going to put ourselves in situations at times that's going to require us to be in things where we have to overcome. Because if we want comfort, if we want to put ourselves in comfortable situations, chances are we're never going to have to overcome. But if we truly want to be overcomers, we need to put ourselves in situations that demand the cross. We indeed have the power of the overcomer when we're willingly content with the power of the overcomer. You know, I have a couple of just illustrations, one of which includes Tom Brady. We don't need to hear about him, right? I don't know, right? But it's always of, if I just had a little bit more. I would be happy if I just had a little bit more. And so, Tom Brady aside, John D. Rockefeller, founder of Standard Oil, at one point the world's richest man, first billionaire. And they say if you count inflation that he would still be the richest man in modern history. Okay? A reporter asked him, how much money is enough? How much money is enough? And you know what his response was? Just a little bit more. You see, we're all about wanting just a little bit more. If I had a little bit more, I'd be happy. Jesus says, you're only happy when you're content with what I give. If my life was just a little bit better, if I didn't have to deal with that, if I could just kick that illness or that addiction, or if I would just stop that behavior, then my life would be full. And if I can figure out, do this, do that, don't do that, don't do that, then I can solve it. Unfortunately, we fall short. Because hope can only be found in him and power can only be found in him. When we're willingly content with the power of the overcomer. So here, I just want some questions for you. As we kind of wrap things up, land the plane of sorts, can you be content with what God is doing in your life right here, right now? And I'm not saying, are you? Because that may change tomorrow. Because today I am, tomorrow I'm not. So let's put a can. Can you be content? Whatever it is, sucky diagnosis, terrible childhood, whatever it is, can you be content with what God is doing right here, right now? And so what I've done is just to kind of put some scriptural strength to this, just a couple of, now I didn't mean to cherry pick verses, but these are verses that really felt powerful to me. And Paul writes in 2 Corinthians, he says, now the Lord is spirit, and where the spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. This is what I take it. We have the freedom. We've got the choice. We've got the ability to decide whether or not we are going to be content with him or not. It's your choice. It really is. And I would love to say in every situation, I have always said, Jesus, you're enough. And that would be a terrible injustice to God and his process in my life. But what do we do? What do we do? Can we be content? Can we say, God, I'm okay with whatever you bring my way, and I'm going to have the freedom to choose you over that? And then the second question is, do you trust God that this is not too big for you through his strength? Do you trust God that whatever you're going through, that this is not too big through his strength, that you can deal with it? And so a verse that we all know, we've all learned, is 1 Corinthians 10:13. He says, Paul writes, no temptation has overtaken you. Now, you need to know that the word for temptation and the word for a test is the exact same word. So this can be translated, no test, no trial has overtaken you except what is common to mankind, and God is faithful. He will not let you be tested beyond what you can bear. So when we go through things, we look at them and we decide. Remember, James says that God does not tempt anybody. So if it's a temptation, it is not from God. But certainly God sends us things in our life to make us more like his son Jesus, to make us mature, to make us fulfilled. And we've got the choice whether we are going to trust God that he is going to be faithful always and forever. And when we are tested or when we are tempted, he will provide a way out so we can endure it. Is God big enough? Because if you say no, I'm not sure, then you're going to self-solve or try. But if you say, God, I trust you because you've always been faithful. And when I've been tested, when I'm tried, when I'm tempted, no matter what happens in my life, I can always rely on you. And our last question, do you believe that God is still working in your life for his good through you? Do you believe that God is still working in your life for his good through you? Now, this is another verse we like to put on our coffee mugs, like to put on our mouse pads, which we don't have anymore, like as screensavers of, we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and who've been called according to his purpose. We love that verse. It's so comforting. But somehow, sometimes we think that whenever anything bad happens, we question whether or not God really loves us. Well, God, you know, you said that all things are going to work for my good, and sometimes, guess what? They don't. Unless we realize that what this verse is actually saying and what it actually means is that we know that in all things, God works for his good in us. Everything that God brings us, everything he allows, is going to be like stirred together into a pot. And everything he feeds us is going to make us more mature, able to endure, able to persevere, so that we can then, at some time later, tell just a little piece of our story so that others are encouraged and say, you know what? If he can do it, I can do it. And so God uses all things for his good through us. We all have this choice. We all have this choice whether or not we are going to believe that God is still working. And if you need this verse, claim it. But then don't hold God to the standard of your expectation either. But we know that we have the power of the overcomer when we're willingly content with the power of the overcomer, even if it means you need to take up your crown of thorns, knowing that somewhere in the future that belongs to you. I just want to encourage you that we can always find hope. We can always find power. Not in ourselves, because nothing we ever do is good enough. Nothing we ever do is going to fix it, because we can never fix me with me. I don't know if you ever found that out. The more you try to fix it, the worse you get. But the hope and the power can be ours if we hope in the power of the overcomer. So God, thank you for your word this morning. For our stories, all of our stories. And some of us may feel like we're more in the valley, more in that dip in the mountain than climbing up. And that's okay, because sometimes in those valleys is when we actually have to look up. Because there's nowhere else to look except look up. And when we look up, then we see that you are at work and you are faithful, always have been, always will be through all generations. To the glory of your name, Jesus. And because the risen one is overcome, then there is no valley that you are not there, and there is no mountaintop where you are not there, and you bring glory, and you bring wonder, and you bring hope, and you bring strength to all of our situations. Lord, we thank you that you are a great and wonderful, and a God that you want to be a part of our lives. We thank you for it, Jesus. Amen.